Hello, welcome to our episode today with Brooke West. Brooke is an amazing human, a visionary human, someone that is creating something called the MAD Peer Support Network for yoga teachers and yoga therapists. And it's a community where people can come together and have real talk about the problems and the amazing things that are happening to us as yoga teachers and yoga therapists. So let's jump right into this episode and hear about the visionary ideas that Brooke has for helping support us as new yoga teachers and new yoga therapists, as seasoned people dealing with all the problems that come with being a yoga teacher, a yoga therapist, from financial to intellectual property to burnout. And then how does she bring that into the idea of intentional communities and living together, which is a revolutionary way to bust capitalism? So let's go ahead and get started and meet Brooke. Welcome to the Yoga Therapy Hour podcast. Did you know that we give a free gift with each and every guest? Every month, we go back and find a gift either from the guests themselves, or we find a research article or something really interesting that goes along with the topic, and we send it out once a month. There's many different categories you can sign up for, and look in the show notes and it will show you how you can get to that link to sign up for our free gift every single guest. All right, let's get into the show and go meet our guest for today. Welcome, Brooke. I'm so happy to finally see you in person. We've known each other through social media and through our students. How are you today?
I am so excited to talk to you too. It's just really nice to be able to have a moment together. Just us, you know, we have been communicating for a long time on social. And I was thinking this morning about that social media app where it was just conversations. Do you remember that? Are you still on that?
Yeah.
You are still on that. Great. Yeah. Seeing you there and launching all the online work that is necessary for right now. I'm glad to be able to meet with you and
our orbit.
Yeah, exactly. It's a little early here for me. It's a little early, but
5 in the morning.
Okay. Yeah, it's not my usual time. It's not my usual time. I'm more of an evening person, but I'm so happy to be able to have the chance to talk to you. I'm so excited. Thank you.
Where are you, Brooke?
I'm on Da'au Aga, which is Washoe territory, the shore of Lake Tahoe. I'm in South Lake Tahoe, California.
Wonderful. All right. So let's just jump right in. You have started a new program called MAD Yoga that I am so interested in and fascinated by. And for anyone listening, you know, if you're listening to this in the future, just know that, as Brooke told me before we started, this MAD Yoga Network has a consciousness of its own, and it may grow and change and shift according to the needs of the people who get involved. And I think that's really cool to kind of leave that openness for it to become what it needs to be to serve the world. And how would you describe it today?
Well, it's an emerging program, so it's been, you know, maybe close to 2 decades in the making, thinking about my own mental health and my own isolation and my own real relief that I have found from yoga, the big yoga, over the last 20 years for my own mental health, my own mood stabilization, my social health, eventually my financial health, becoming a yoga therapist. So I've been sort of gestating, where are the other yoga teachers who are being really supported by yoga for their mental health? And now we're using the word neurodivergence. We didn't really have that word back then. I've been teaching for 20 years. And I've always been involved in peer support. So in high school, I went through a peer training and then went through some peer trainings that were related to spiritual awakening, spiritual emergence, and spiritual emergency processes, which I correlate with Kundalini rising, where our energy is being or not being directed, and how it might affect both our spiritual evolution and our presentation with mental health. Could it look like psychosis? Could it look like mania? Could it look like depression? So bringing peer support as a foundational piece, because I'm not licensed as an MFT, I'm a certified yoga therapist, right? So I do have this lay counseling experience, which I find very effective and therapeutic for people, because it's different than having a one-on-one therapy consultation with someone who's licensed. We can sort of go all over the place, including talking about suicide. I'm not a mandated reporter. And studies show that if you can talk about suicide, you're less likely to suicide.
Yeah.
So, you know, managing my own mental health, it got so much better. I changed so much over the 20 years of practicing yoga and also incorporating some other, you know, therapies with medication and therapy and 12-step recovery, managing my own losses and grief and trauma. Wanting to create, you know, a more accessible program for people, wanting to allow myself to be more accessible with my personal experience and my professional experience as a yoga therapist specializing in mental health, and really having to start from ground zero because of the pandemic. I had a yoga studio that I closed, and it just has felt like time. Like, it finally feels like time. We have the network online to reach one another. Back 15 years ago, when I was sitting staring at my computer before the internet and the World Wide Web was so robust, now we're really able to find each other. And so I've had the opportunity to present for the Accessible Yoga Organization a couple of weeks ago and decided to launch this Mad Yoga peer support for and by yoga teachers, because there is no space just for yoga teachers to talk openly, and especially neurodivergent yoga teachers who have a different perspective on what it's like to be in the world and what it's like to be in the yoga profession, in the industry, and how do we manage? How do we manage making money with less spoons than everybody that we've, you know, like, determined is the bar for energy output? And as we're starting to talk about, you know, capitalism and deconstructing that, it seems like a relevant moment, really, to start talking very honestly and very transparently about what's working, what's not working, and how can we help each other.
Okay, so I'm going to summarize. You had a lot to say there. What I think I'm hearing you say, organically, you saw there was a need in the community for yoga teachers, yoga therapists to have honest discussions about our mental health, about our finances, about our stresses, and especially a lot of neurodivergent yoga teachers and yoga therapists, which I believe there are so many, many don't even know they are, but it's such a career that we seem to flock to. But you're creating a kind of a community network, and it can be done all over the world on Zoom, for us to come together and have honest discussions. And I actually haven't seen that. I mean, we have it within organizations, like Optimal State has it for their teachers, but to have it that's crossing cultures and crossing different traditions of yoga, I think that's a really unique idea. Let's have an honest, frank discussion, because I think also what you said about deconstructing capitalism and also how hard it's been in these last 4 or 5 years with the pandemic. I really don't know that many yoga teachers or yoga therapists that are making a full-time living doing this. And yet you can't really do a full-time day job and do this well. It's just such a hard place to be.
It is a hard place to be. And so I think that, you know, we're being presented with a real challenge. And there are so many yoga teachers in the United States, in North America, and also around the world. There's a real opportunity for a lot of people to make subtle changes slowly so that we can start or continue to contribute to the evolution of our culture. Yoga teachers have a lot of power. We have prana, we have spiritual eye, we have the sushumna, we have so many tools that if we put our minds together and we put our hearts together and our prana together, we know from the Maharishi effect, right? If groups of us get together to pray or meditate, we can change crime in our neighborhood. We can stop bombs in Croatia and Bosnia. We've seen the evidence of how powerful working together is. And so what I'm hoping is just to have these conversations to start and see what comes up solutions wise. We're coming up with some, and I have my own ideas because of my own experience, interested in intentional community, really interested in moving together more collaboratively and cooperatively for bigger ambitions, let's say. But for now, I've simply opened up my Zoom channel, my Zoom number, so that people can come. We've met a couple of times. We've had people from Australia, Canada, we're calling in from Mexico, the Netherlands, and all corners of the United States, the Pacific Northwest, Texas, the Northeast, California, the Midwest. People are coming who really feel like they haven't had a chance to talk about the missing pieces in their YTTs, the missing pieces in how do we make a living. But our hearts are dedicated to this, right? We know it's changed us. We know it can help other people. There's so much heart to it. So how do we join our heart centers, our heart energy together to really look, like you said, frankly, at what is happening, and how do we make those little adjustments so that it can be more accessible, more hospitable, more sustainable, right? Like you said, you have to diversify and hustle so hard. I know I was one of the only yoga teachers, yoga therapists in my community who was making a living teaching yoga. And I know that I didn't know a lot of people. You were one, you know, but far, you know, doing your own thing. You know, I think of like Donna Farhi and, you know, the people who are really rolling the engine. It takes a lot of energy and dedication, and it's like a 24/7 gig.
Yeah, you know, I tell people this all the time and they don't always believe me, but I think we all look at the big names of yoga, you know, the ones that are really out in front, and think, oh, if I can just get to that level, I'll have enough students to make a living and it'll all be great. But I know a lot of the big name people, and they spend as much on their marketing, on keeping this big organization rolling forward. And yes, they're seen, and yes, they're leaders, and yes, they're doing great work in the world and making a difference, but many of them are not thriving financially, because as the organization grows, you have to hire so many people. So I keep telling people, keep it small, keep it tight, stay on mission, like do your thing and do it well. And I think a lot of the people I know that are making a living in yoga and yoga therapy, they just do really good work. They're kind of quiet. They're under the radar. They have a lot of client referrals by word of mouth. So, and they're able to piece together some workshops with some privates, with teaching and in teacher training. Like, it's all these little pieces, but we probably wouldn't even know their names, and they're doing better financially than some of the big names. I find it so interesting.
Yeah. You know, we were just talking about that. I have a sort of a silent kind of co-partner, really close friend, who's also a yoga teacher, who is, I would say, maybe one of the secret weapons of the accessible yoga community. She's been friends with Jivana for a long, long, long time before accessible yoga even started. We were talking about, you know, the importance of reaching out, especially to the people who show up, these mad yoga support groups who come in with anxiety and not knowing who they're going to be talking to and the vulnerability that it takes to share, and reaching out to them one-on-one afterwards to say, really honestly, like sincerely, thank you. I really enjoyed having you there. Thank you so much for helping to make that session what it was. Those connections, that's really how you develop a professional network. People feel your heart. I can't explain what I do. I can't take a photo of what I do in restorative yoga, yoga nidra, and meditation. But if somebody experiences me or my work, then they will be able to sort of transmit what they've experienced, right? And that builds a network. But as far as the financial piece, I love that you say there are these sort of quiet stars that we don't know. And I would like to know who they are. I would like to know who you think they are, who Jivana thinks they are. You know, we can see people who are really making a huge difference. You know, not to sound arrogant, but I was one of those people in San Luis Obispo that really altered the culture and created integrity within San Luis Obispo and then kind of all along the coast from what I was doing, and then expanded it out and clients in other countries and all of that. But I think it's really important to recognize that if you have 62,000 followers on Instagram, how many of those are really going to be personally engaged with you and really going to help contribute to the consciousness that we are trying to build? I love that. And that's what our yoga training told us too, was don't dig a lot of shallow holes to find water. Go deep in one spot.
And this is why I think a peer support network of yoga teachers and yoga therapists is so amazing, because if we're mostly working either local, like one-on-one in person, mm-hmm. or maybe we have a niche, like you and I both do mental health online, that's kind of a niche that we serve people, neurodivergent people, there's really no competition. I think some people might be worried that if I come into this peer support group, I'm going to share my ideas and everybody else is going to steal them, and then my ideas won't be special anymore. But if we're all doing good work in our community, if Brooke does really well in San Luis Obispo, with some ideas she learned from Amy in the peer support network, that doesn't take away anything from me in Minneapolis. And I think you and I have actually had this happening where I feel an open heart towards you. So I'm trying to send some people your way. I know you've sent people my way. I think instead of thinking of it as competition and someone might steal my stuff, to think of this peer support as, I trust myself to be able to build a network for myself. And that starts with my colleagues.
Yeah. And you know, what I'm seeing in the groups are young, new, fresh yoga teachers who mm-hmm. don't have a lot of experience on the ground. And it does make such a difference to have been on the ground for 20 years. How long have you been teaching? About 25 years?
Yeah, since late 80s. No, early 90s. I would say early 90s.
So yeah. Longer, so 35 years, you've been teaching a long time.
Yeah.
And people who are being pumped out of 200-hour yoga teacher trainings, who aren't being told that the spine has natural curves or that the knee moves one in one plane, you know, different, like really important pieces to keep this industry with integrity. Those people who are sincerely dedicated to service, to their own practice and to service, are really hungry for mentorship.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's not necessarily a mentorship program. We're not calling it that. But it gives me the chance to feel really good about sharing some suggestions if it seems like it's welcome. And really supporting people to continue to serve the people, like you said, in their community. There's enough business for everyone. I agree with that too. I've also had intellectual property stolen and used, right? And I think we need to that. It's so upsetting.
After you spend 20, 25 years creating something and then somebody just snags it and puts their name on it and throws a little different label, like, it's so upsetting.
It's so upsetting, and it's happened to me recently, and I contacted Yoga Alliance about it and they did nothing.
Mm. Hello, are you interested in polyvagal theory? Well, if so, I have two really cool things you might be interested in. One is an app called the Mighty Network, where Marlisa Sullivan and myself are hosting a yoga therapy and polyvagal theory group, and it's free. You can just join the group, come in and share thoughts and ideas on polyvagal theory, yoga, and yoga therapy. We try to post every week, stimulating a community around yoga, the nervous system, and polyvagal theory. So we'd love to have you join us. In addition, we are giving a 7-week class on polyvagal theory and yoga starting in the fall. You can find that on www.polyvagalinstitute.org, O-R-G. So we'd love to invite you to that 7-week course that's starting in September of 2024.
And I was watching this show on Hulu called Food Stars with Gordon Ramsay and Lisa Vanderpump. And they were, you know, watching these competitors. One of these competitors took the other person's really successful idea and used it for themselves. And Lisa Vanderpump, who's a very successful restaurateur, said, "It's lazy." Mm-hmm. And I thought, I wouldn't feel comfortable saying that straight to somebody. And there's also this like teacher, student kind of lineage thing that is kind of a gray area, but that ashteya, that non-stealing, that honesty piece, you know, maybe the highest compliment, but it's also really painful. And it affected my business in smaller communities, having people poach my ideas, not even changing the name. That happened to me, like not changing the description used on the social media.
Yeah. And honestly, the person or people that I have had this happen with, they still don't see anything wrong with it. I mean, this goes back to peer support. Like, who do you talk to about that? You don't want to gossip. You don't want to name names. You don't want to, you know, publicly shame people, although a little part of you does want to do that. But in general, what can you do? Where do we, I've had this discussion with me. 40, 50, you know, seasoned yoga teachers, 40 and 50 years of teaching, and younger people who are 1 year in will just come and take their whole thing and be like, "Well, this is out there. Why can't I have this?" It's like, well, nobody put it together like that. Nobody had these thoughts, and we need to credit where these thoughts come from. And I don't know. It just seems like people don't even understand that that is stealing and it is unethical.
Yeah. And I think we could talk about that more, about like, where does identity come in? And where does self-confidence come in? Where each individual teacher has something to offer, has that been nurtured and drawn out and celebrated? We don't have time, because again, we're pumping out all these yoga teachers that we're not spending enough time with. We got 200 hours together and I'm lecturing at you. I don't know who you are and what your gifts are. And so people that are pushed out of the nest to go teach, and I think they're at a loss because they haven't had the business training. They are desperate to teach, desperate financially, whatever it is, you know. And I can also say that the couple of people who really did those stark sort of deaths were really struggling in their personal lives.
Yes.
With things that they couldn't talk about with anybody. Domestic violence. Things that are taboo. And so, you know, I really do feel that if we can have places and people where we can be honest and talk about these things, they're not going to pervert into other places and create behaviors that are questionable.
Yeah.
I just think it's really important to be that svadhyaya, like, let's keep talking about what we're experiencing within that we might have internalized shame about. Might feel like it's just not okay to talk about these things that are making us act really badly, you know?
You know, I noticed when I looked at your website that, you know, there's kind of like the overall yoga teacher, yoga therapist, peer support group. But then you also said the possibility of breaking off into micro communities. And I know when I went through things like this, intellectual property theft, like I would never have wanted to talk about it in front of a group of 60 people. Like that would have just been a little much. But I met 3 or 4 people in there that I trusted, that I valued their opinion, and we could kind of break off into a micro group or a breakout room. Like, I think I would totally love that. So can you talk a little bit about that idea? I mean, I know this is evolving and it will have this consciousness of its own, but what are your thoughts on those micro groups?
I mean, I think that that's really part of it, sharing our Instagram links and how it can connect with each other. Because if you hear someone who says something and it piques your interest, I mean, these last couple of meetings, it's really been a lot of sort of topic spitballing. what are people thinking about? They're thinking about their spoons. They're thinking about decentralizing yoga. They're thinking about letting their Yoga Alliance and IYT certifications lapse because of ethical questions. If somebody talked about this theft, let's say I did, and you were in the group, you might not want to say anything, but you could connect with me later. You know, these groups aren't that big. They've been 7 and 9 people, and there have been some shy people who haven't wanted to share, but very appreciative of what is being shared by people who do feel comfortable being vulnerable. Some of the people who are trained as, you know, therapists who have maybe less internalized stigma about sharing things. But I feel the same way. I mean, especially when that happened and some other really kind of life-changing experiences with outside people, I have felt the isolation and the loneliness of also being a well-respected yoga therapist in my community who really didn't have a place to share it, who wanted to blog it, wanted to shout it from the rooftop, you know, and then being counseled, don't do that. And so practicing not doing that and watching karma unfold, watching this one thieves yoga studio just crumble within 2 years. I mean, honestly, not surprised. You know, if you're going to act that way, it's not feeding the consciousness, it's taking away from something, right?
That is what saved me from all of these challenges. I mean, I could list 10 things that I think about every week that are still very upsetting to me. But yeah, what it comes down to is people trying to survive. They're probably burnt out. They don't have confidence. And from that state of lack and asteya, needing to take, hoarding, you know, grasping, we do bad things, full stop. And I can understand that. I have not been a wealthy person. I grew up in poverty. I get that. It's still not acceptable, but I do understand why it's happening.
Yeah, I mean, that's where we have to pull out our compassion, right? And stay connected to Kamalaya, right? Like Lakshmi, like reminding ourselves that there is enough. And that I think the spiritual path gets more and more challenging as we stay more committed to it, so that, you know, we're being asked to deal with these really painful, difficult, challenging experiences for our own growth. Even having people in my life who I can talk to about that, again, you know, I don't want to sound arrogant, but it can be lonely at the top, right? And who do leaders talk to about the pains of leadership? We talk about this like ambition or, you know, this ideal to be a leader, but when you're there, it's messy. And we want to look put together, right? We want to be superstars and have all the energy and be able to just keep this plate spinning. But at the end of the day, teaching yoga is a tough gig, and it's really a spiritual practice. We have to remember that this is a spiritual, internal, very personal and private development, but it can be really helpful to have other people to find. And I will be honest with you that it's taken me about 18 years to actually find a friend in the business who I really feel like I can tell anything to.
Yeah, I have one of those too. We talk once a week for an hour, and there's nothing I can't say, very frankly, my disappointments, my frustrations, my insecurities, you know, but it's hard to find a person like that. And
it is. And it takes time to develop that rapport, that trust, and that relationship. I think Mad Yoga peer support for right now, I mean, I have some other ideas and I have an idea of where I want it to go, and we can talk about that too. But just for right now, it's who's out there? Who's willing to talk? Who's self-reflective? Who's hurting? Who has something to contribute? I mean, everyone does. You know, are there some of us out here who are thinking progressively and radically and wanting to drive the ship a little bit? Where is yoga going? Where is the yoga industry going? Where is our culture going? What's happening in the zeitgeist? And where do we want it to go? Because I've been treading water in a lot of pain and discouragement and disappointment, especially since closing my studio over pandemic. I had a waiting list before pandemic. It just evaporated. You know, everything that I had worked for so long just evaporated. And so I think I've been taking my time in the last 4 years to make the move that feels the right move. I got a lot of Capricorn in my Vedic chart and Capricorn rising. And so kind of biding my time and going into poverty during that time, but letting that be the sacrifice and the compromise, because I am dedicated to this. I will be practicing yoga until the day that my very last breath will be a yogic breath, you know? And again, we have a lot of untapped creativity and energy that I think when we come together, many hands make a miracle. And I'm just one person who can start these conversations, offer my little offerings, you know, do my teacher trainings and the things that I'm really good at. And also a call to really put it on the table that we have agency and we are working in a system. We're not going to break the system, I think, not this week anyway. So how do we work with the system to make things a little bit better somehow, more comfortable?
I'm just really resonating with what you're saying, because I feel like for the last 4 years of the pandemic, as you said, we're all spinning these plates and trying to figure out how to move from in-person to then online. And then some people are still excited about online, but a lot of people are saying, no, I only want to be in person again. So then you're spinning again to try to figure out that. Then, as you said, the industry as a whole, the yoga industrial complex, we've got IAYT, who has just spun off a 300-hour program for licensed healthcare practitioners, which some people feel is undercutting the 800-hour yoga therapy program. So that's kind of messy, and what's going to happen to our field? And then you've got, on the other hand, Yoga Alliance, who I'm hearing rumors they've always been so against the word yoga therapy, but apparently they're, and I don't know too much about this, maybe I should get them on the podcast, but apparently there's going to be a spinoff where they're going to enter into the therapeutic yoga space and the medical yoga space, which is really going to convolute that line between yoga and yoga therapy and therapeutic yoga. And it just feels like the ground keeps moving from under our feet. And I don't know where we stand. I don't know where we're going to land.
Yes, right. It's unstable. And so using our own practices to, you know, go within and find the stability within, you know, there's the spiritual piece of it, I think. It's becoming diluted. There are so many yoga teachers on the planet. So I'm a devotee of Yogananda. I had to take vows of discipleship to receive these sort of more advanced meditation practices so that I could practice what they call Kriya Yoga, which is a very deep, internalized, very powerful pranayama, basically series of pranayama techniques, magnetizing the spine. It's very powerful. Yogananda, before he died, his last sort of rallying cry was what he called world brotherhood communities, which were small intentional communities, high thinking, simple living. And when he died and left the self-realization fellowship to the nuns kicked the monks out, the girls kicked the boys out, and the boys went off.
I'll hold back.
What did you say?
I'll hold back my thoughts on that. Good job, girls.
So they kicked the boys out, and the boys, a few of them, remembered this call that Yogananda was saying about these intentional communities. So from that, Song of the Morning in Michigan started, Sunburst in Santa Barbara started, Ananda in Nevada City started, in Georgia, our Roy Eugene Davis started his, and those became beacons and began to attract people. This is part of my goal, I think, you know, what would it be like to eventually live communally in an intentional community based on the values of yoga, to share the load, you know, because like you said, with the dilution and with so many people on the planet and not being raised with them in the same community, but coming together as adults, and having different values and behaviors and traumas and backgrounds and all of that, having this moral and this ethical foundation within yoga, coming together with that as the basis, I think could be a way to create sustainable, smaller networks of people who, you know, maybe don't get along all the time, because who does, but with a bigger vision to be of service, right? I think the service piece is really neglected too in today's YTTs. It's a really important part of the spiritual practice to be of service, do without concern for the fruit. And that in industrial society is not what we're being programmed. That's not how we're being programmed to think or act. And so to recall those pieces of yoga, right? The service, the spiritual aspects, moving Kundalini in the way that we have been trained. These, I think, are part of the classical yoga teachings that are also kind of being diluted. I think I went off on a tangent there, and I'm not sure if I spoke directly to what you had just said, but it came to mind that, you know, these small groups of people are how we're going to survive.
Right.
Creating these 100 or 200 people, you know, you don't have to have 42K followers. Like, what's that going to really do for us?
I've thought about this too. I have like 10 really, really close friends that are either choosing to be single or think that maybe their partner is going to pass away before them. And we have this pact that we will live together as a community of women, whoever, any of us that want to join together, whether we get a big house or we have a piece of land or, you know, whatever it is, we will be there in the end, especially for those of us who don't have children. I mean, I think even if you do have children, you can't expect them to take care of you in the end. But the point is, I think a lot of yoga people are talking about this kind of thing. And I think, you know, the hard part about it is we expect yoga people to have integrity and to show up. And probably we're just like everybody else. We're just as flawed as everyone else. So I actually, as a child, my parents were part of a missionary work, and we lived in what's called a religious house or a spiritual house with four other families. And you think it's going to be this utopia, but there's a lot of real stuff going on in there. So that's, I'm kind of like, could this work? Could this happen? Or am I kidding myself? What do you think? You think there's potential here?
Well, I do. And I want to call it like the lack of confidence. I don't mean to say it like that. It's not a personal thing,
I'm
but
skeptical.
I mean, yes, the skepticism, right? We're living in America where it's individualism and every person for themselves, and pull yourself up by the bootstraps and your ego is the biggest thing. And what do people think of me? And all of that stuff really gets in the way of creating cohesive functioning communities. Our families are fractured, right? We're four generations away from living that way. You know, I think a lot of people did share houses back in the 40s and earlier, you know, when poverty was a kind of a different thing. So I was trained at Ananda, the Expanding Light at Ananda, which is an intentional community of about 250 people who are living the principles that Yogananda, Paramahansa Yogananda, the author of Autobiography of a Yogi, that he brought to the West. I'm really interested in intentional community and have been studying it and have been traveling around. I've been to Findhorn. I've been to Occidental Arts and Ecology Center in Northern California. I've been to permaculture communities down in Baja. I've been all over the place, and I've also done a lot of studying on worker cooperatives and what does it mean? Different than a member co-op, like your co-op where you go get food, but a worker co-op. And there are some communities, one in the Connecticut River Valley in Massachusetts, and in the Basque area in Spain, and in Italy, there are some communities where these member co-ops are the most sustainable business model that there is. They're more successful than sole proprietorships. They last longer because people's vision is for this business and what they want to make happen. And whatever happens in the background, everybody is working together to get this business, to keep it going. So it's a different philosophy, really. There's a book that was recently published called The Cooperative Culture Handbook. I have it up there. Basically, what it says is, when you're having a conflict, it's time to look within and see what's happening for you to be involved or perpetuating this conflict. And I also studied with a couple of other very experienced intentional community participants this older man in particular, and I was at this lecture, and he said very simply, people need to be heard. And that's part of what this peer support piece is. It's the beginning of this, right? Like, let's give space for people to feel heard. And it takes a long time. Hear each other out and calm the nervous system. It can take days, weeks, years, right? We can hold resentment. How do we work it out? And so I think that it's really important, you know, to find those people that you do resonate with on a spiritual level, maybe something that you can't describe, and develop it from there and really lean into the Foundation for Intentional Community. They have a lot of resources because they're kind of the hub for intentional communities around the globe. You know, there's a lot of resources, and it's the common problem. How do we deal with conflict? And people will move out and people will come in. I mean, I turned my yoga studio into a co-op that last year before pandemic. We had four women who were sharing the rent, sharing the load, sharing the schedule. And we were also sharing the email addresses. And we built this business that was happening. And then pandemic shut the doors. So there's an attitude, I think, and a perspective. There's a maturity level that needs to be there. Yeah, 100%. That is, you know, I think maybe hard to find, or, you know, it takes a certain personality. I think it takes certain personalities. And if I could say one more thing in that vein, is there's been a lot of conversation in these mad yoga sessions about, how do we earn a living? I have chronic pain. I have PMDD. There are times of the month, there are times of the year where I can't work. How do we do this? And we're talking about yoga co-ops, member co-ops, where small groups of yoga teachers get together to share the overhead of the cost of running a business, an online platform, doing all of the back end admin work that is about 85% of being a yoga teacher anymore, right? Teaching is 15% of what we do, if that, like, it's not much. And how can that be a way where we have these cooperative yoga spaces that are niched, you know, yoga for neurodivergence, yoga for mental health, that might draw people? This alliance among yoga teachers, I think, has the potential for very powerful magnetism and momentum.
I think it's the way forward. Yeah. Honestly, when I hear you speak, each of us has been on this island where we're trying to take on the entire cost for MailChimp, the entire cost for a space, the entire cost for Calendly, Acuity, like those posts just crush us. And like you said, there may be times where we're not well enough to work, and then what? So when I hear you speak about this, however it emerges, it makes sense to share the load, share the cost, and each do our thing under the umbrella and network. I mean, it sounds lovely.
Mm-hmm. It's actually a very simple concept, and it's one of the least known business structures in the West. And especially in the United States, we don't talk about worker cooperatives. Nobody knows about it, but there is a separate tax bracket for it. It is acknowledged as a certain business type for the IRS, the Internal Revenue Service, that's here in the United States. And it's not just sharing the financial burden, it's sharing the emotional burden. It's sharing, I'm having a baby, you're going to be the one that's going to have to do the accounting for the next 5 months, or, you know, and okay, I will. And I know that when my mom gets sick and I have to go down south, you're going to take up the slack, and not everybody has to do the MailChimp every time. And that, like, it just feels easier to have people there. I'm not married, don't have kids, I'm not close with my family. And so I really feel that island. When pandemic hit and we all had to move our work online, I've been working on Zoom since 2015, and so it wasn't foreign to me. But watching every yoga studio owner in my community trying to learn that on their own and no one helping anyone, it was heartbreaking.
We have so much collective knowledge and wisdom and strength and vision. There's no reason we all have to do it alone. And if we do it together, we can change the world.
There is so much collective strength and wisdom There is so much. And if we're being bogged down by the yoga industrial complex and capitalism and all of this stuff, we can't serve as well. One of the ideas is, let's do the math. How many people are having mental health struggles in the United States, and how many yoga teachers are there? They're about comparable. I think it's like 50 to 35. It's like, that's kind of the ratio. And so what I was thinking is, if yoga teachers would be trained in the most minimal peer support skills, then we could lean in and support the people in our communities who are struggling with mental health, who of course aren't all reporting their struggles with mental health. They don't have enough mental health issues to have a diagnosis, but they're struggling. Or they don't have access to a psychiatrist to give them what they need, or they don't have access to a mental health provider. But there are so many yoga teachers out there. There are so many of us. You know, if I had a Joan of Arc mission, which I might in a way, just starting to talk about peer support and the power of it and leaning in, as opposed to closing down when someone starts talking about their trauma or whatever, a student in our class, a colleague, whoever, we need to start helping people, because we don't have enough mental health providers in the United States. There are 100,000 short in the school systems in the United States of mental health providers. So yoga teachers have a lot of potential there. When we're bogged down by isolation and trying to hustle to make money, we don't have a lot of space to expand into meeting the needs. And I've taken about a 4-year sabbatical from teaching, and I've been thinking about all these things for a long, long time. And so they're starting to coalesce and gel together. And I think it's important just to plant the seed, you know?
You know, Brooke, I didn't know that this is where the conversation was going to go with you. I knew you have MAD Yoga peer support for yoga teachers and yoga therapists, but I didn't really understand how amazing this could be. And I had written an article with Mala Cunningham in the spring issue 2024 of the Yoga Therapy Today, Mental Health and Yoga Therapy, the Case for Peer Counseling. I just wrote this article, but I didn't.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. I didn't know that that's what you were going to talk about today. And I'm all over this too. I was seeing it from a little different perspective, because I want to train people to give peer support, like a certification in peer support. I think you're running a peer support group, if I'm understanding you.
Yes, because I've been trained. I have 4 different peer support facilitator trainings.
Wow.
And being a facilitator is its own skill set.
I agree with you. I mean, I think we're coming together is that people can't get mental health support. They maybe can't afford it. Like, I just had someone today, I made a referral, and they said, oh, well, if that person isn't in my state, I can't work with them. And I was like,
right.
People are digital nomads these days. They don't live in a state. So what? They can't use any mental health services? That's crazy. So I think this is a niche that could really help with our mental health crisis.
It does help. You can see the statistics, and the police force are using it because suicide is so strong. And in law enforcement, police officers are being trained to in peer support so that someone can call up and say, I'm really having a hard time tonight about what just happened or whatever. You know, it's keeping people alive. An experienced and skilled and gifted peer support facilitator. I think there's a real, like being a true powerful yoga teacher for a long period of time, that peer support skills. I would love to talk to you about it more if, you know.
Yeah, let's do that after we.
Yeah.
It's so interesting when things come together, because, you know, the truth is, if I'm honest, I've been working with Mala Cunningham on this for about 1.5 years. But there's this little part of me that's doubting, like, is this really what we need to be doing? And our talk today has reaffirmed my commitment to it, how important it is. So thank you for that.
It's a consciousness that's starting to become heard, you know, because we need creative solutions to our problems. And those of us on the ground, grassroots, folk medicine, all of that, I think is where we have to start taking it into our own hands. I will plug that presentation that I did for Accessible Yoga, which did lay out a lot of the statistics for mental health issues, suicide, different age groups, different races, and also the statistics about peer support.
Where can people see that?
That's a really good question. I don't know if you have to like sign up for the Neurodivergence Mental Health and Yoga series that was just offered. I don't think that you can purchase one single session. And I don't know if that information is now intellectual property of Accessible Yoga, but I do have my slides and I can post that information in my Instagram at least. And maybe I can offer another session that people can come into for an hour and a half on a donation basis. Yeah, it would be great because we need peer support. We need mental health help. There's a lot of yoga teachers who can offer just the simplest leaning in and love. And also, I think that it ties in with this spiritual awakening that we're having collectively. This anger, it looks like anger, it looks like grief right now, but it is an evolution in our culture, in the human race, on the planet. And those spiritual awakenings often look like madness. People are talking about crazy ideas like having peer support or having an intentional community where we raise ducks or, you know, whatever it is, like it sounds pretty outlandish. And also it can, you know, veer into psychosis and like really scary things if people don't have the resources, don't know how to handle it. You know, I have my own experience with psychosis when I was 23. I had a breakdown. And there was a samadhi experience that I had that no one wanted to talk about. And so that again is another, you know, exploration that I do of how is this one of the levels of samadhi where we're losing our ego and experiencing something numinous and then coming back to earth and having a really hard time integrating what we just experienced. And then now being back in this culture, yoga has been a real help for me to create a scaffold within which to navigate and learn and grow. But I think that people are having these breaks that could be nurtured, not pathologized as much, not medicated, not hospitalized, you know, in solitary confinement and figure it out on your own. Here's some pills, go get therapy. Maybe that, and let's practice some yoga and see that this is part of the natural human experience to evolve spiritually and to have these numinous experiences that we can't describe and we don't know how to manage it. Well, there are ways to manage it, and the real yoga is one of them. And so I think that's another kind of a stream or something to transmit, to remind people that the struggles that we're going through that look like mental health that yoga teachers can lean into to listen about can also be really well managed by drawing the energy in toward the spine and up to the brow and having relaxation practices, having a culture of relaxation. It is revolutionary to rest. That whole thing is, I think, a really important part of this whole piece of creating what's the next kind of era of yoga and our culture and wellness.
Well, Brooke, we've had a lovely conversation and I have another meeting in about 4 minutes. I want to share your website, which is www.brookeweston.com. And there's a page on there that says Mad Yoga Network, peer support by and for teachers. And it gives when the meetings are upcoming and a lot of other events that you're also working on. So I just want to encourage everyone to go to Brooke's website. There's a contact page where you can contact her, and I'm sure that you'll respond when people do that.
Yeah, thank you. I feel like it's just the beginning of a longer conversation, and you're welcome to come to any of these sessions. We're probably going to create an open group and then a closed group where a little cohort can go through for a little bit to get to know each other better. You can also go to madyoganetwork.com, and that will take you to that same page.
Yeah. We will continue this conversation, Brooke. I want to thank you so much for being here. And
thank you so much.
I will follow up with you on all of these mutual things that we're thinking about. So
that's great. I'm so grateful. Thank you so much. It's so good to see you.
Thank you, Brooke, so much for being on the podcast. Personally and professionally, you know, it's always so interesting when you're having self-doubt and then the universe just throws something right into your space to let you know you're on the right track and you need to keep going. So, you know, if you're interested in this idea of peer support, it's in the IAYT magazine, Yoga Therapy Today, the spring 2024. And I believe it's on page 28. If you're interested in learning more, you can contact myself or Mala Cunningham or Brooke. I think we're all interested in this same thing, which is mental health and yoga therapy, the case for peer support. All right. Thank you, everyone. We'll be in touch. Have a great day. Thank you to our guest from this week. It is always such a pleasure to go deeply with another human being for an hour and have that recorded to share with the rest of the world. I think it's one of my favorite things that I've ever done. And there are other ways that the Optimal State would like to share with you. One of those opportunities is to meet with me over at the University of Minnesota Bakken Center. We have therapeutic yoga classes multiple times of the year, and they're always in a four-week series, like 4 weeks for low back and hips, 4 weeks for upper back and neck, 4 weeks for insomnia and anxiety. So we'll put these links into the show notes. And if you'd like to join us online through the University of Minnesota Bakken Center, we'd love to have class with you on a regular basis.
A special thank you to our team here at Optimal State. We are truly a global family. George Mantuan, one of our executive producers. Adam Satchel, senior media producer and sound engineer from the Philippines. Krishna Panchal, a producer from Canada. Modupe Abdullahi, who does the show notes and is an editor for us from Nigeria. And Peter Morley, who wrote and produced the music for this show, who lives in Australia. Find more about Peter's work at www.zenmusic.biz. Thank you for listening. We'll see you next time.